Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
You know, I think as humans, we have great potential to tackle problems, to tackle issues. I know we get off. We don't always devote ourselves like we need to, but there are things that we can tackle out there. And I think almost anything we can tackle, peace in the Middle East, even. I think that's something that we can accomplish and put our minds to it. I look at all these grand scale things that we want to work on and we need to work on, and I don't see the list of hunger up there, of solving hunger. And I think that's one of those things that if we devoted ourselves as hard as we devote ourselves to other things in this world, like perhaps political power and other nefarious things, I think we could make a great difference. I'm hoping we can. I hope we do. But I know there are people out there who are totally devoted to that, and they are making a great difference right now. We talk about food insecurity today and how we can tackle it on Voices of Montana.
During big game season, we'd like to remind hunters that respecting private landowners and the access they provide is more important than ever. Positive relationships between hunters and landowners impacts all recreationalists. Please remember, respecting private land and building relationships with landowners protects hunting access opportunities. Hunting private land is a privilege. Ask first to hunt, fish, and recreate on private land and follow ethical fair chase hunting practices. It's up to us. Respect access. Protect the hunt. Visit fwp.mt.gov/it's up to us.
Thanks again for being here and making us part of your Montana mornings for all those years. We look at things like, I relate it to like suicide in Montana. It's a gut punch. Yeah, and it's something that we can do something about if we devote ourselves to it. I kind of see hunger in that same vein. I think we produce a lot in this country. In many areas, overproducing. And what happens to some of that food? Can we get a better distribution chain going along? Can we make better use of the resources that we have? I don't know how much food is tossed away. I know that's the nature of food for health reasons, but it seems like there's a lot of it. And I just look at why don't we have such a network in place that there's never any bit of that wasted, because there's hungry faces out there. Gail Carlson is with us this morning, and I very much appreciate the work she's doing. She's president, chief executive officer of the Montana Food Bank Network. And boy, talk about hunger, Gail. You guys get to see it every day, but you're in the trenches too. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing really well. We've made it through our busy season.
So the busy season is now then, right? Does the holiday season get, does the Christmas get real busy for you too?
You know, most of our work is really up front because we work with those distribution organizations throughout the state. So their busy season is going to be now and all out through December. For us, if we don't have everything to them by now, then we're not doing our job. So we've had drivers out there for the last 3-4 weeks getting all those turkeys and hams and everything that they need for their holiday season out to them. And now their work kicks in.
You know, talk about their work, Gail, because, I started out by talking about how I think we can do a better job of distributing, of our food resources. But the work that you guys do, I mean, it takes a network to feed America, doesn't it?
It definitely does. And, you know, our organization covers the entire state of Montana, so that's a big chunk right there. And when we're talking about some of these very small rural communities that have very little resources, not even a grocery store, let alone any kind of emergency food service. So that's some of our challenges that we try to overcome in making sure that some of those small communities still get the services that they need. But there's just a lot of, you know, accessibility, cost problems, transportation, logistics that they have to deal with every single day. But they're doing a great job, and they're doing the best they can in their communities.
Well, I know, and it makes a big difference. And, of course, we've talked about it since the pandemic as well. I suppose the arena has changed a little bit there. Talk about that. Are you seeing more need, or are we seeing that maybe back up a little bit from when the pandemic was more fully in effect?
You know, what we're starting to see, and I think everybody can really resonate with this, is not necessarily an increase in the number of individuals that are accessing pantries and kitchens and so on, but we're seeing them going more frequently. And we're seeing this evidenced by, you know, the changes in what's estimated to be the cost per meal for individuals is going up. Grocery store prices are going up, fuel's going up, rent's going up, you know, all of this stuff. So that when you have a household that maybe just needed to fill in the gaps for a week or so out of the month, out of their budgets, now they're having to rely on their pantries almost all month long to be able to supplement that.
There's a lot of things that you guys are doing too, and I want to get into all of those because it's not just you know, collecting food and distributing food. I know there's a lot more to it, but let's ask that big question about how much food is out there. How are we accessing it? And I know the food industry and the Food Bank Network has come a long ways in the past couple of decades, so to speak, in terms of, I think, saving food and learning how to distribute, what would you call it, viable products?
Yeah, you know, in our world, we call it the grocery recovery or grocery rescue program. Just about all of our pantries participate in that in some way, shape, or form. We work with a lot of the national chains, and we work with getting relationships developed with them so that all of these stores within their communities will take that product that has hit maybe its Best Buy, sell by date, ugly fruit, you know, those kinds of things that you hear about, perfectly usable food, but they need to pull it off of their shelves according to their guidelines. So all of that food is now being rescued by our pantries throughout the state, and they're using that for their distribution, which has been a huge piece of the distribution that they do within their communities. It also helps to eliminate that food waste, plus the, you know, retailers are able to take that tax write-off, so it's a win-win in so many different ways.
Yeah. How are we in terms of rescuing our perishable items and distributing them in time?
Usually it's pretty good. Now we do have some, you know, things within the dairy world that we have some restrictions on how long we can use that product. But for the most part, you know, people within their homes are going to be using these things within a couple of weeks after they purchase them. But they do still have a shelf life of like canned goods and shelf stable up to a year or two beyond, as long as everything is stored properly and in the right temperature and not dented cans and things like that. Fresh foods, it's going to have a life beyond what usually the grocery store will have. Peel a couple of layers of maybe that lettuce off and that head of lettuce still is very usable on the inside. So there's a lot of things that we can extend that life on. The one thing that we're also very, very cautious of course, is baby food. We don't, and our neighbors do not distribute anything that has hit its Best Buy sell by date on there. If you notice, it's not, I'm not saying expired. It is a date that basically has the best, highest nutrients to be used before that date, but it is still perfectly usable, perfectly healthy food beyond that date.
Well, and that's something I think people need to recognize as well. How well do they recognize that, or how do they know if something says, and they're looking, well, should I just throw this out, or should I give it to the food bank? Can they ask that question?
Yeah, absolutely, and we get that all the time. I would say, you know, take a look at it, and if it's 2023 and you've got a can of soup that says from 2003, I'd say no, probably not. But if it's only a couple of years old and maybe it had an expiration date of a year ago, but it's maybe in 2020, then I would say take a look at it, make sure that it doesn't have any leaks, no rusts around the seams, no dents or things like that, and it's probably still going to be perfectly good food. Some of the things that you get that are more fresh foods, say frozen, maybe meats or so on, those are going to start to be subjected to a lot of freezer burn. We also had to be very careful about what temperatures they were stored in. So I would say from the point of purchase till about a year is a good point for that one. But again, it's going to start losing some of its quality of that. But, you know, it's basically look at it and think, would you serve that to your own household as well?
Yeah. I want to look at hunger in Montana. The statistics and noted on your website, mfbn.org. Again, it's the Montana Food Bank Network. And Gail Carlson, President and Chief Executive Officer and the ringleader of the group there. And again, 1 in 8 children face hunger in Montana. That's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We've got, you know, 1 in 12 Montanans, and that includes about 28,000 children are experiencing food insecurity. And that's, you know, it's somehow it's the kids that always seem to really, you know, hit the hardest, because these are the children that are getting the free and reduced lunch programs in schools. They're the ones that are getting provided with meals, you know, on after-school care programs, things like that. And then the scary part is they go home, and all of those things are not available, and there's a good chance that their home pantries are empty. So we've got a program called Backpack and School Pantry that try to keep, you know, those kids in making sure that they have food throughout the weekend and on their holiday breaks from school. But there's still going to be children that are going to have challenges in accessing food on those times when they're not in the school programs.
We're going to have Andrew Luff join us in just a bit, and he's with Toole County. He's a deputy sheriff up there and criminal investigator, mm-hmm. but also director of policy and governance with the Sagebrush Food Pantry. So we're going to get an idea of what it's like in rural America, rural Montana, so to speak, and the things that they are doing to coordinate better food security. We're also going to look further at the issue of food insecurity as well here. Just a quick note about the hunger in Montana. So 1 in 12 people face hunger, and you call it food insecurity. What's the level of that? What does food insecurity mean?
And it has a different meaning. I know for a lot of individuals, I've gotten some different reactions when I've talked about food insecurity, and it's not protecting your food. It is the inability to access food that consistently results in a reduced quality or lack of nutrient-dense food. So you're going to see this in homes that are unable to purchase food on a regular basis or don't have access to good food. You're going to find this in rural communities who maybe have 100, 150 miles to the nearest grocery store, so they're having to access from a convenience store that is packaged, high sodium, those types of things, not necessarily high nutrition food. So that it is basically, it's just that inability to access consistently quality, nutrient-dense food.
And I appreciate that. And is there a difference there? Because people may recognize, well, I might have food insecurity in my life, but I may not be hungry.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And definitely the level of hungry is a different approach to it, and that is literally you are going without food on a regular basis. You're skipping meals.
So how has it helped, or does it help, to sort of, I don't know if you're redefining it, but to try to tackle insecurity? I suppose you do it the same way as you're tackling hunger, or is there a nuance there that we look at that makes a difference publicly?
You know, from our perspective, food insecurity, if it's not already an issue of hunger, it will be very, very soon. Mm-hmm. So we try to tackle, you know, access to food consistently by supporting all of those partners that we work with, the 360 different agencies throughout the state, to making sure that they have the resources so that there is ability to access food consistently. Therefore, we try to head off hunger. So it's kind of that prevention level that we try to work with, but of course there's going to be areas and households that are facing hunger, and we're going to work with those as well. But we try to work on that prevention level as much as possible.
Gail Carlson is with us, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Montana Food Bank Network. She works with Sagebrush Food Pantry out of Shelby, Montana, Toole County, and Andrew Luft, who is the Director of Policy and Governance there, and as I mentioned, to a County Deputy Sheriff, will join us as we talk about how we tackle hunger in rural Montana. Food insecurity today, or food security today on Voices. The Montana Food Bank Network is centered in Missoula, Montana. Was it kind of like a party there this weekend, Gail?
Yeah, a little bit. A lot of tailgates going on, and of course, we're a house divided here at this organization.
Oh, I suppose you are, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Did you have some fun with it through the week, though?
A little bit. Yeah, of course, there's a little bit of smack talk going on. So we are probably like a lot of other organizations. We want to make sure we play up on that.
Yeah, it is fun. I wonder where Shelby is in that grizz cat vein of things. Andrew Luft joins us now, Deputy Sheriff from Toole County and also criminal investigator there, but Director of Policy and Governance with the Sagebrush Food Pantry. I know we're going to talk about food insecurity, Andrew, but where do you guys sit on this grizz cat fence mostly up there?
I believe most of our guys are Grizzlies, but I have to say, go Huskies, UW.
You didn't have to say that, but I guess it's okay that you did. Hey, Andrew, thanks for joining us here. talk about Sagebrush Food Pantry. I know we chatted a little bit earlier on this, and I know you have things going on there, too. How are you meeting that? What's the need in rural Montana, and how are you meeting it?
So Sagebrush has kind of seen a couple of different things over the last couple of years. We are a growing organization. Our demand's kind of been up about 400 to 500% over the last 4 to 5 years. Rural Montana kind of has a lack of food pantries. We are, almost all of them up here are all volunteer organizations. Getting volunteers is hard. It's kind of caused some food pantries to shut down, and we've picked up a lot of slack there. We're distributing anywhere between 300 and 400 families a month through our various programs. We're looking at a bunch of expansion, including trying to get a new facility to go back to client choice model, set up a commercial kitchen to be able to do a lot more preservation. There's a lot of work up here. My volunteers do an amazing job, and that's kind of the most interesting thing I say is we don't have one paid staff member. Everything that we do up here is people on their own time.
That's incredible, isn't it, Gail?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Is that common?
Within the rural communities, the smaller organizations, absolutely. They try to take 100% of what everyone gives them and gives it right back into the communities.
Andrew, so are you meeting that volunteer need?
Honestly, we have trouble. I mean, getting volunteers anywhere, it doesn't matter if you're a food pantry or an animal shelter, getting volunteers nowadays is kind of hard. I'd be truthful, last week we ended up having to close. I had a number of my volunteers that had COVID and had the quarantine, and we didn't have enough people to open up. I was working a regular shift, and we weren't able to meet needs that day. That's probably one of the most critical challenges that we face at times.
So in that case, do you guys open up another day, or I know you have limited hours. How do you manage through that?
We're open 2 days a week. If we can open up another day, we've done that. But normally we just go to our next distribution day. So we're open Wednesdays and Thursdays. We're hoping to expand that with our new facility. But it's just, we're open 2 days a week. So we put out messages and we talk to people and tell them, hey, we're not going to be open. We got to come back on Thursday and we'll get you taken care of then.
I want to hear more about the new facility planning and, of course, the commercial kitchen. I think that's a huge step forward. Again, this Andrew Luft with us here from Sagebrush Food Pantry. Gail Carlson, talk about Sagebrush Food Pantry then. Talk about how typical they are, so to speak, and how they are meeting the need.
Absolutely. You know, and as far as meeting the needs, I mean, they are in a very rural area. They have been a great partner in making sure that everyone in those communities and the surrounding communities are able to access what they have. And I think they're very typical of a lot of rural communities in that they have limited hours. They're 100% volunteer driven. And so that has all kinds of dynamics, as Andrew has mentioned, the inability maybe to do distribution because they don't have their volunteers available in a day. And you know, access to that food on a regular basis. When you're out, you're out. What are you going to do when you have a distribution again that week and maybe you're very low on what you have in your pantry? So there's all kinds of challenges that they face that are pretty typical within rural, but it's amazing. I think food banks are probably one of the most flexible and innovative organizations you'll ever run into and what they're able to do with what little bit that they have.
Yeah, and I think that's because they really, if you wanted to follow up on that, Andrew, do, but I know it's, I think you guys get creative because you care about meeting that need.
We do. I mean, we've tried to innovate our model. I mean, we work out of what I refer to as our broom closet. We've got maybe 50, 60 square meters of space that we work out of, and we serve 400 families a month. So trying to shift back to a box model, we've done deliveries. I'm on shift. I, you know, take Facebook messages, and I try to get people connected with emergency resources. We've got a lot of good people that are doing a lot of good work, and what we can do, we can do. That's kind of the challenge, and we try to meet the need wherever we can. Flexibility is kind of the key, especially in a volunteer organization, working with the people that we have and working with the resources that we have.
let's get into expansion plans and a commercial kitchen.
So right now we're working out our deal to be able to buy a new building here or an old building here in Shelby. But what our goal is kind of a multi-phase project, where first phase is to get us into the building and be able to change our distribution model back to client choice. And that's basically where we go from handing you a box of food to where you come in and you get to shop for your food. That kind of reduces food waste and it gets clients less stuff that they're not going to use or they don't know how to use. Our second phase is that commercial kitchen. So a part of the facility is going to be dedicated to being able to both prepare and repackage food. So one of the challenges that small food pantries face is we have distributors and we have food processors that want to make donations, but they deal in bulk products. So think like 50-pound bags of lentils, 50-pound bags of beans or flours. Well, I can't give somebody a 50-pound bag of flour and they know like how to use it or be able to store it. So what we need to be able to do is take that item and process it down into usable packages. Well, flour especially is a very dangerous product to work with when you're repackaging because it can aerosolize and actually become explosive.
Yeah.
So you need dedicated facilities to be able to do that. On top of that is looking at being able to do canning of goods, to be able to do vacuum packing so that we can preserve meats and vegetables for a longer period of time.
Is that, Gail, the future of food distribution?
It absolutely is. And right now what we do in our facility is a lot of that same, a very similar thing in that we get bulk product, pasta, cereal, lentils, rice, those types of things in these big 1,000-pound totes, and then we repackage into consumer size. So we are finding, especially by working with a lot of our local producers who don't have that wherewithal to be able to break that down into smaller product size, that's the only way we're going to be able to get that in from that product from them. So that is a trend that we're seeing within a lot of organizations on the community level so that they can be able to work with their local producers as well.
I'm going to see what kind of, we'll talk after this break and see what kind of doors that might open for people who want to help end hunger. So we'll talk about food access, food rescue, disaster response, and how we can play our part there. Gail Carlson, Andrew Luft, Food Insecurity, let's end it.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
We're smart and we care and we can end hunger. I mean, it's a three-letter word, end. Oh, man. Think about it. Hey, welcome back. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. We're two decades strong and working on three, and thank you for making us part of your Montana mornings. Every $1 helps provide at least five meals. You'll find that information, and that economy is vitally important as we do have food insecurity and hunger in Montana. That's on the Montana Food Bank Network, mfbn.org, as we're speaking with President and Chief Executive Officer Gail Carlson, been involved in that venture since 2007. Also, Andrew Luft is with us, Toole County Deputy Sheriff, Criminal Investigator there, and Director of Policy and Governance with the Sagebrush Food Pantry, which is out of Shelby, Montana. Gail, let's just start off with how important the work is. Now, you look at what you guys do as a food bank network. Why don't you tell me what you're doing and how you're connected to folks like Andrew and the Sagebrush Food Pantry?
You know, there's a lot of different aspects that we work on when we're talking about, you know, ending hunger in Montana. And it is, a lot of it is food distribution. I will say that's probably a majority of what we do and making sure that we have families that have food right now. But we also look at the policy work too and working with our legislators and with our state, our federal representatives and making sure that SNAP is good and solid and WIC programs and those types of things because it is a challenge, like you say, for all of us that are doing the food distribution to be able to do this on our own. So we do have to partner up and get this done. But as far as working with other organizations, of course, having that extra help from Sagebrush, we cannot be everywhere in the state. And if it wasn't for our partner agencies, we would not be able to get to those households that have that need on a regular basis. So we truly do rely on them. They are the network.
Andrew, does Sagebrush exist without the Montana Food Bank Network?
I would say we would exist, but we wouldn't have some of the top-level support that we have. I mean, whether it's through federal and state advocacy at the legislatures or even just program management. I mean, We would be around, but we wouldn't be in the same position. I think one big program, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which we get through the USDA that MFBN helps us with, gets us a lot of very high-quality, top-end products to be able to distribute that we wouldn't have otherwise.
You know, I think I saw on your Facebook page, and Gail, you might want to comment on this, because one of your partners is Bentown Pump. And they partner at a statewide level. But Andrew, I think I saw that they made a pledge to donate up to $9,000 in matching funds for the Sagebrush Food Pantry in and of itself. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the Town Pump Corporation is definitely one of our biggest local company supporters.
Yeah.
So they do a point of sale donation campaign. So that's where you walk into the store and they ask if you want to donate $1 or $2 to the food pantry every year. Great program. It provides most of our operating funds throughout the year. But yeah, Town Pump this year upped their match to about $9,000. And it looks like they've collected through point of sale donations that entire portion too, plus along with what we've collected from community partners and outside donations.
Boy, how about that, Gail? Town Pump, not only, you know, being a part, but being a big part and being, I think, a genuine part of helping End Hunger in Montana.
Absolutely. You know, they've got a very a huge network within our state as well, and they enlist all of their customers to be a part of that support network. And so they are then turn around and they give thousands and thousands of dollars. And what I love about it is that sometimes it's pretty hard for these smaller communities, the smaller pantries, to be able to get grant funding and donor support for these. They don't have a lot of resources in their own community. They don't necessarily have the staffing resources to go out and do a lot of fundraising events, things like that. And so they rely on these types of initiatives like Town Pump has to be able to provide them, like Andrew says, with their operating support throughout the year.
What, do you have a question for Andrew?
I do, actually, Andrew, and I again, don't want to put you on the spot, but we are hearing from the network, and it may be just kind of a broad stroke that we see that a lot of agencies are saying not necessarily an increase in the number of the clients that they're getting in their pantries, but increased frequency. Are you seeing that at Sagebrush as well?
We're seeing both. But I think that the increased number isn't specifically from an increased need, but an increased lack of support in our regional area. But we are definitely seeing our clients coming more often and more clients coming from our surrounding counties.
What kind of trend does that tell you? I mean, is it you think it's a pandemic trend? I know we look at our economy and our inflation. I go into a grocery store and I'm looking at things and I'm going, well, that is out of my diet now. Because of the price of those things.
Yeah, I think it's pricing and it's also getting access to those rural communities. But I think you also saw, too, the stigma was started to being reduced during pandemic. A lot of people were accessing pantries. And I don't know if you're seeing that there as well, Andrew. Maybe some people that wouldn't have come before and are coming now.
Yeah, we've been doing good work working through the stigma and being able to explain what grocery rescue is and how coming to the food pantry honestly will help us reduce food waste. That's probably been one of our biggest things there, with being able to get some of those clients that are just coming in to see, hey, do you guys have fresh produce this week?
Gail, talk about some of those programs. Speaking of fresh produce, because you know we think it's maybe just a donation center and then a distribution center. But for a number of years, I think the industry has gotten real creative about getting the support and resources it needs.
It has. You know, we're certainly not the only network. There's a lot of internal networks as well. So while we may resource, and again, we partner with a lot of national partners as well, through Feeding America, through the Pacific Northwest. So we get produce from a lot of outside of Montana areas. But there's also a lot of internal, within the state hubs, food hubs with a lot of local producers, community gardeners, home gardeners, you know, those kinds of things that are wanting to be able to support their organizations and their communities. And really, what a wonderful way to do it. If you love to garden, plant a few extra tomato plants next year. Plant a few extra rows of whatever your favorite produce is and plan on donating that to your local pantry. It is tremendous support that you can do for them, and it's kind of fun for you to do that.
What are ways, what are programs up there, Andrew, that that you guys are exploring? And
one of our biggest partners for fresh produce is actually our Hutterite Colonies. They've been awesome at supporting us through the years of bringing in fresh produce about every Thursday through the summer. So normally they're doing their farmer's market. Anything that they don't sell at the farmer's market ends up getting donated to the food pantry. So throughout the summers, we're once a week getting a load of anything from potatoes, carrots, zucchinis, just all that good stuff that the Hutterite colonies are growing up here. But they've always been good partners in helping get products like that out to the community.
And that's a good segue into how we can end hunger. Gail and Andrew just respond to that, but there's some notes here on your website, MontanaFoodBankNetwork.org. Again, start a fundraiser. Host a food drive. Those are things that I don't think people think about. I think they go, oh, I'm going to try to help, do my part and just deliver some groceries. But those are things that might be sort of fun, especially for some of those organizations.
Especially if you're working for an industry that maybe has some other competitors. How fun is that to be able to do a food drive for your local pantry and kind of make a little competitive? Lots of fun to do that. Of course, you mentioned volunteerism. It doesn't need to be a lot of hours every week. If you can even just put a couple of hours in at your local pantry, that is tremendous. And it's just a lot of fun. I can say we do some mobile food pantries here, and we try to get our staff to get out and to help and support some of our agencies and by helping them out with distributions. And it's just a very feel-good moment, gets you a chance to meet some new people. But there's so many different ways. And if you've got the funding to support, that's great, but don't feel that it's always got to be a check that you have to write. It's your time and your talent as well.
Let me ask, well, we have just a couple of minutes here. Andrew, as Director of Policy and Governance there with Sagebrush Food Pantry, what do you see that can be most effectual from our government in terms of helping without putting a heavy hand on it, so to speak? And then also, I mean, I look at some of these videos and news out there about how, because we have regulations and quotas, the government is forcing, well, there was a big note of it in Canada by a milk distributor who made a note about it himself, made a point to bring it out there. It just seems like our government policies are not necessarily completely on board like they can be.
Well, I mean, I think we have one of the best public health systems in the world. I've traveled around and I've seen food illness abroad, and I've had food illness abroad. So I don't think like our policies that protect people, but what we see as good government programs is like the Emergency Food Assistance Program, the Farm Bill, things that can get federal funding to our local producers to be able to buy and make products that come back to us that we can distribute to the community. We saw that during COVID was Farmers to Family, our fresh produce boxes that got a massive increase in budget, was putting money into the pockets of our farmers and keeping them afloat while also getting us hundreds of boxes of produce that we were able to distribute to the community and make sure that more fresh product was getting onto our community's plates.
Gail, you want to follow up? What in your estimation is like maybe one or two things that the policy could change that would make a difference?
Well, I think, we always rely on a lot of SNAP support as well, because we do realize that pantries, first of all, aren't going to be available 24/7. They're not going to be able to have all the product that they want to be able to get. And it's the expectation of a household to rely on their local food pantry 100% is just not an expectation that I think we can fulfill. So we do depend on programs like SNAP, like WIC, and to be able to ensure that those families are getting it when they need it, to make the process a little simpler so it's not so complicated, not so challenging, and to make sure that they have those increases as food costs go up as well, because then that allows them to maybe go and get the items that they can't get there at their pantry. It's kind of a puzzle, and we want to make sure that all those pieces are being equitably contributing to what that household needs. So things like that in the TFAP program, Andrew had mentioned that before, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and that is basically supporting our ag community as well by making sure that all that product that is produced and overproduced then goes into the Emergency
emergency food system. So supporting those types of programs on the federal level is all a part of the partnership in making sure that we fight food insecurity.
Finishing up here, Gail Carlson is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Montana Food Bank Network. Andrew Luft joins us as well, Cool County Deputy Sheriff, and with the Sagebrush Food Pantry. Just a couple of minutes for closing thoughts. Andrew, we'll start with you about that. Volunteerism, you noted how sometimes you don't have enough of that resource, a call out there for folks to be a part of it. They don't have to do eight-hour shifts, do they?
No, not at all. We're only, honestly, our distribution's only open for about 3 hours when we're there. But we have all sorts of different roles. I mean, we rely on MFBN with some of their deliveries, but at the same time, they come every 6 weeks. We also work with Great Falls, where we need drivers to be able to go down there once to twice a week to help pick up. And that's a 2-3 hour round trip. Those are the kind of things we're looking at. Plus, there's plenty of other roles that we have that people can help out with, whether it's public facing or not public facing.
And that goes all across these food pantries and food banks in Montana. Gail.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say just check in. I know on our website you have a number of different options if you go to mfbn.org to talk about how you might want to get involved with us, how to make a food donation, how to make a financial donation, how to volunteer. You can sign up your groups. It's great for corporate team building. It's great for family events. So just think about what it is and also to consider the fact that this is a 24/7, 365 issue. It is not just during the holidays, so keep that in your mind.
Yeah, and I think that's important because we are a little more aware now, aren't we, Gail?
Absolutely. I think, like I said, mentioned before, is the pandemic made it a little easier for families to go. It made people more aware of it. But we don't want to forget that and keep that in our minds because it's really easy to get comfortable with it and forget that hunger is still out there.
And a special thanks to all those who help with hunger, just on that neighbor-to-neighbor level as well. I know that goes on, especially for neighbors of seniors out there. Just love that spirit of Montana. Hey, thank you guys for what you do as well. Have a great and blessed holiday, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. And join us daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana, a live issue-oriented talk show heard daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on local stations all across Montana.